That was actually my first like fully nude love scene, which is crazy because I've been doing this for a minute.
What's up, folks? I'm Kara Mahorn, aka The Blurred Girl, and welcome back to The Blurred Girl Podcast. If you're fans of movies like Raid Redemption and The Night Comes for Us, then you probably already know about Woo Assassin. That dropped on Netflix back in 2019. Well, the next installment of the Woo Assassin series drops this week, and it's a Netflix original movie called Woo Assassin's Fistful of Vengeance, and brings back Iko Uwais, Lawrence Kao, and Louis Tan, who I'm speaking with today in this episode. We talk about everything from the challenging task of shooting an action movie during COVID, getting cast in Shadow and Bone, and filming his first nude sex scene with Queen Sono star Pearl Tusi. I cannot wait to tell you more about our chat, but first, let's pay some bills.
There's something weird going on with influencers right now. I'm a little freaked out. They just get everything they want. Everything's a little too perfect. Their smiles are a little too straight. They're using filters I can't find anywhere. I know what I'm about to say might sound a little unhinged, but I think it might be witchcraft. At least, that's what Jenna Clayton thought right before she went missing. We're excited to introduce a new show from Realm, If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, starring Oscar-nominated actress Gabourey Sidibe. When a Black writer goes missing, a white podcast host with a savior complex takes up the cause of finding her and collides with a coven of influencers she suspects are responsible. This show is a little bit of The Craft meets Mean Girls meets Get Out. Learn more about If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It at realm.fm, and be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Before I forget, be sure to subscribe to the Blurred Girl podcast on your favorite podcatcher. And if you can, please leave me a nice comment over on iTunes. And if you're feeling really generous, please screenshot this episode and tag me over on IG because I love to interact with listeners that way. I really do. Now, I first heard about Louis Tan when he was campaigning to play Asian American Iron Fist for Marvel on Netflix. Now, he didn't get that role, but he did land the role of Zhou Sheng, the drunken style fighter of season one. Hundreds of Twitter training videos later, he made a brief appearance as Shatterstar in Deadpool, and then came his role as Gaius Chow on Into the Badlands, which I still think was one of AMC's most slept-on series. After that, he starred in the Netflix original series Woo Assassins as Lucian Lee, alongside Indonesian superstar, stunt performer, martial artist, and actor Iko Uwais. Then Tan starred as Cole in Mortal Kombat in 2021, arguably his biggest role ever, and one that was created especially for him for the franchise. This week, a follow-up movie to Woo Assassins called Fistful of Vengeance drops on Netflix, and I caught up with Tan via Zoom in Budapest, where he's shooting on location for his new role as Tolya Yul Batar in season 2 of Shadow and Bone. Up next, my interview with Louis Tan. The last time we spoke was like, oh my God, I think, what was it? You were Mortal Kombat, was that Australia? Adelaide?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Oh my God. That feels like 150 years ago.
But and that was when we went there pre-pandemic? Or was that post?
Yeah, it was pre-pandemic. Because we did. And because the crazy thing was, I did all the interviews, and then the movie didn't release until after, like in the middle of the pandemic. So I had to sit on that stuff for...
Imagine what I had to do.
Oh my God.
And then we went back and shot and did the reshoots during COVID. So it was just a whole nother process. And
I didn't realize that. Oh, wow.
That was a very long stretched out part of my life, for sure.
I know a lot of fans are going to be excited to know that it's coming back. It's going to be probably easier post... I don't know if we could say post-pandemic, but now that we've got a handle on things.
I hope so. You know, the productions still have the pandemic rules right now, but mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, we learned a lot from the first film, and it's such, you know, it's such a big franchise. There's so many characters, there's so much going on. that it's hard to do in one very fast-paced movie. So, you know, I think that number two, everyone's going to be really, really pleased with it, because there was a lot of stuff we did right in MK1, and there was some stuff that we could work on. So, yeah, I'm really excited to do number two.
Yeah, I think we all are. I think we all are going to be extremely I know I, for one, need to see what happens, because Cole's going to pick up a major character, I think.
Yep.
And one that everybody was looking for. So, yeah, no, I'm super excited. Now, let's talk about COVID a little bit, and then how you got Fistful of Vengeance, because I was sitting up ready, waiting for Woo Assassin 2 to be a series, and it's a movie. And my first question is, was that because of the pandemic that it just turned into a movie, or was that always the plan?
It wasn't because of the pandemic per se, but I think what happened was we took a look at, you know, the numbers, and we took a look at the fan interactions and the critiques and comments on Woo Assassin season one. And there was, we had a lot of strong points and we had some weak points too, you know, and I think that the film format for our show in particular really works well as a condensed action piece in as a film. And once that idea got brought up, we were kind of like, all right, this actually sounds really good, you know, kind of streamlining the story and giving the audience just a nonstop hour and a half packed full of action, instead of having to, you know, wait every episode to see some insane fights. You know, it's kind of like, so let's experiment with this idea. And I'm really, really pleased with it, actually, you know, and I'm a pretty big critic on my own work, and I'm really, really happy with it, actually.
It definitely reminds me of those Saturday morning, Sunday morning martial arts movies that we would all finish breakfast real quick so we could race over to the living room and watch, because it's definitely like, there's a lot of fights. I'm not complaining. You know, I'm not.
It might have more fights than Mortal Kombat, actually.
Can I tell you, halfway, I have seen it, and halfway through it, I'm like, I think these are the fights, and this is the pacing that we were expecting of Mortal Kombat. Like,
yeah,
Fistful of Vengeance might be more Mortal Kombat than Mortal Kombat.
Well, I will say, you know, the pace is unreal, because normally, you know, in action films, it kind of, you know, there's this moment where it kind of, you know, you get to take a breath, and then, you know, you'll get another big fight scene later on and a few more scenes. After the first 15 minutes, you know, for those people that haven't seen the show, we wanted to kind of lay a groundwork of what was going on. But after those first 15 minutes, we're like, you're going on a ride.
Even your character is like, I'm getting tired of this.
I know.
Like, even your character's like, can I get a minute?
That's right. There's a line in the script where he's like, you know what? I'm getting sick of this shit.
He's like, can I get one night where I got to fight nobody?
Yeah. But, you know, that's what we wanted to do. And we wanted to be, it's kind of an homage also to those old, you know, older action films from, you know, the 80s and 90s, and even the title kind of has like that homage feeling to those old school martial art flicks. We wanted to tone down, you know, the VFX elements, as you saw, you know, there's still some of those, you know, kind of magic, the Dao and the Wu and all that stuff in the mythology, but we kind of toned it all down and just kind of streamlined it and made it like straight crazy.
So I'm just checking my notes here. Iko, you, and Lawrence all come back. So we got Kai, Lou, and Tommy, who are back.
Yeah.
But we even see in the trailer, Jenny's gone. What happened to Jenny? That was my first question. I was all stressed out. I'm like, wait, Jenny? I thought Jenny was supposed to take up the mantle, and Jenny is gone. Tell me that was scheduling.
Well, yeah, not going to lie. It was a little bit to do with scheduling. Lily is off shooting an amazing film with Damien Chazelle called Babylon with, you know, this little actor named Brad Pitt. I forgot, something like that. And, yeah, you know, no, but realistically too, like, it kind of helped the story, because as much as we would love to have her with us, it gave us such a motivation to do, you know, for revenge. You know, you don't need to explain much there. Our close family member was killed, and we're gonna go find out who did it. And upon that journey, everything just unravels. So it's, like I said, you know, simplifying the Wu Assassin story for people that haven't seen the show. You could just watch this movie. You don't need to go back and watch the show. So that's something that's really unique. And I think that that's really cool. And then fans that love Wu Assassins, they're just going to get, you know, a wild action film that really kind of like puts a cherry on the series.
I absolutely think that's the case, because you don't need a lot of backstory, because you're in like a new location and a new storyline. Now, speaking of location, it feels like most of this, correct me if I'm wrong, was shot in Thailand.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
What was it like shooting in Thailand during the pandemic?
It's complicated, you know. It's complicated to shoot anything during the pandemic, but especially action films, in a sense, because there's a lot of training and rehearsal that's involved. You know, you're wearing the masks outside in, if anyone's been to Thailand, you know how humid and hot it is there. So you're wearing a mask in a really hot and humid environment while we're training 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. And it's really taxing on the body, taxing on everyone, on the crew, everybody. You know, it's just it's extremely difficult to film nowadays. And I can't wait until it's all over and we can go back to normal, because it's really, really, it's already stressful making movies. It's already, you know, difficult to do in the whole process. And now it's just like, it's close to being impossible. And so I'm really grateful that, you know, we got it done. Nobody got COVID, thank God. But yeah, it's beyond words how stressful it is.
Yeah, I spoke to a lot of people shooting right now, and it's all the same thing. Like the other star of the show is COVID, and they're very needy.
Yeah, well, if one person gets COVID and they're around anyone else, that's the whole thing shut down for, you know, 10 days or whatever. And 10 days in our business is very expensive. So those things happen. There's a lot of films that and shows that just stopped because of COVID, you know? So there's a lot of that didn't make it through. So we're very fortunate that we finished it, but it was hard. We did a 14-day quarantine, everybody. And we're all in hotels and, you know, couldn't leave. Same in Australia. And then after that, we're just wearing masks throughout the entire shoot, you know, and it's a pain for all the makeup people and for all the stunt people.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you notice in the film, a lot of the bad guys have masks on, but they're like,
I did notice that. Yeah. And I said, they just incorporated it. They
just incorporated it into their outfit, so they didn't have to worry about it.
And also it just took the pressure off of makeup, having to do like their whole face.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I also saw very,
that was also the good thing about Sub-Zero. So
yes, I was going to say, and a lot of the characters, like a lot of the characters that wear masks, they were very lucky.
Yeah, perfect for the pandemic.
I also saw like convenient and creative use of sets, because like one whole thing took place in a hotel and I'm like, that's perfect. Nobody's staying in a hotel right now.
Oh, I thought you said sets. I was like, well, okay. Yeah,
well, we'll get there. No, we'll get there. But okay, no, okay. Sets. with hotels.
Yeah. Well, you know, they were very accommodating in Thailand. Obviously, if anyone knows me and they follow me, they know I have a love for that country. I've been going there since I was a kid. And, you know, I love Thai people, Thai food, and just the vibe there. So, but they were very accommodating with letting us film. And yeah, it was great. We got some really, I mean, the V Hotel, which is a real hotel in Thailand, it's a really nice, you know, luxury hotel in the middle of Bangkok. And they let us destroy that hotel.
I was gonna say, y'all tore it up.
we tore the whole hotel up from the bottom to the top. And so shout out to the V Hotel. Thanks for letting us smash all your front lobby up. I sent a picture to the owner and I was like, did you really sign up for this? It's like, did you know what we were
doing? Did you know?
Yeah. In the contract.
Because that was not special effects. I'm like, nope, that's going through the front door.
Yeah. He smashed up that place.
So
and there were still people in the hotel that were like like visiting the hotel and staying there, and they would walk down the lobby, and I'd just be like resting, just covered in blood, just glass everywhere. Like, they're with their luggage trying to just get by.
That's hilarious. That like they didn't know they were staying there during a fight scene.
Maybe they got a discount because we were being loud.
One of the other characters that came back was Zan, Juju Chan. Yeah. And because I was like, I need to see a fight scene with Juju, like, you know, at least with her and Iko. And I'm not going to give it away, but it did happen. I'm always fascinated by the fight styles.
I went straight from Mortal Kombat reshoots into that movie, like no break.
Oh, wow.
So I was already sore and injured. And, you know, I went into that, and you watched the film. You know, there's no fight double for me in that movie again.
Oh, you don't like fight doubles. You don't know. No. That's against your religion. I know.
Yeah, that is against my religion. at least for now. until I can't do it anymore. But no, I think I got a few more years in me. But yeah, it was a crazy one. It was a crazy one. And there's one particular fight scene in this film that I haven't really got to spoke about too much, which was really unique, which was towards the finale where we use the bolt robot machine. So like, there's like a, if people don't know, there's this giant robot called the Bolt, and you put a camera on this robot, and you have a few specialists come in, and they basically program exactly how this robot is gonna move. And it's called the Bolt because it can move lightning fast. And it's basically this giant metal arm with a camera on it that's spinning and moving, and it can do anything, basically. It can move at lightning speed, and it can go pretty much anywhere. So that finale fight that you saw, that's all like one shot. It's probably like, I don't know how many beats of fight it is. Maybe it's like 500, 600 moves or something. And that was really, really tricky to do and design, because usually you use that machine with cars or... Like, I think they used it in the last Fast and the Furious when it went through that deli and the car got sucked in by the magnet.
Yeah, so
That Bolt robot is following the car, right? We are fighting around this robot as it's moving through us, and we're trying to remember choreography, our foot placements. If you look down at the floor, it looked like a geometry class. There was like marks everywhere. So we rehearsed that like crazy, because if it hits you in the head,
you're done. But yeah, I was gonna ask you how that was done, because we were just talking about all these closed sets, and I'm like, I said either they have a camera op that is a gymnast, or or that was a rig, because there's no way.
Yeah, yeah. It
That's
was really
fascinating.
Tricky. And really scary. And even Iko, you know, who's done more action films than me, and he was like, this is like probably one of the most dangerous things that we've ever done. Because yeah, if one wrong move, one wrong mistake during this long take of choreo, if it was short, it'd be a little easier. But
yeah,
if we're doing this long take of choreo and any one of us makes a mistake and that thing clips you, it's game over, you know? Even the very first shot, it comes like this close to my face before the fight starts, and I'm just like staring at this thing like, if they made one wrong calculation, you know, in the computer, that's a wrap. And that thing has taken off people's arms before in films. Oh. It has injured a lot of people, and to like a serious extent. So
also, correct me if I'm wrong, if you're in a fight scene, you're also gauging what the other person is doing, so the other person can improv a little bit and you can go with it. But it sounds like with this camera, you cannot improv. It has to be exactly what you rehearsed.
No, everything had to be 100% precise. Where you put your foot, where you put your, you know, your face, how far away you are. So that's why when you watch that fight, you know, it's not sped up or anything. There's no like crazy effects on it. It's just raw, real martial arts action choreography designed around this gigantic robot moving super fast around all of us. So there you go, guys. You know, I'm trying my best to do something different.
Modern technology.
Yeah.
It's wall-to-wall fighting. Like, you cannot say that you like martial arts and don't like this movie.
I was in Thailand, and the team, the Singh stunt team, who had worked with my father many years before on Bloodsport and on Hangover 3, They did our action design, and they also did a movie called Ung Bak.
And yes.
So Ung Bak is, you know, like one of the greatest martial art films ever, and it made Tony Jaa, you know, who he is. So it was very, my style was very incorporated into Muay Thai, which was nice for me because I got to do a style that I'm very familiar with and that I like. But then they also added different elements, and you know, into it, as you saw, with different weapons, and you know, there's everything in the movie, guns and weapons and all sorts of different fighting on boats and cars. And you know, we even had motorbikes and stuff, but I think some of that stuff got cut out, but it's like nonstop. It really is. It is just crazy. But it was nice to do the Muay Thai in Thailand, learning from, you know, the great masters. I was in heaven. I couldn't have asked for more.
And yes, shout out to her, also Pearl with her gun kata, because she had some moves in there
Pearl
as well.
Doing gun fu and
yes.
Judo.
Yes.
And, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff. And Pearl was getting it. You could see.
She was. I wanted her to wear more. I'm like, baby girl's going to get kicked in the stomach. I need some body armor. She cute, but I want her to be.
I was worried for some of the stunt boys that were fighting with her because she was going in.
She literally was. And yes, I believe when there is a scene when you all get to a temple, I'm not going to give it away. Yeah. Even the camera angle. My boyfriend and I said it at the same time. We were like, Ung Bak.
Yep.
It looked exactly like Tony Jaa going in the first movie, into the temple for the first time.
We also had a really awesome director named Roel Renee, who not only directed the film, but shot like 90% of the film. Like
camera
in his hand. He's the cinematographer. If you saw at the end, he got the credit for that. He was running with us and gunning with us the entire time. I think he lost like 15 pounds at the end of that movie. Seriously, he was running around with us, shooting everything himself. And that's why the movie has that energy. That energy is there for a reason. It's because it was like that. It was real. So, you know, the camera captures that energy. And sometimes people use it and they edit a certain way to make it feel like it has an energy. But you get to see it and we don't even have to cut.
So let's talk about some of the new people that were on the set. Francesca Corny, who is Priya, who was like the lovable, adorable character that had access to everything, but had a checkered past. And Pearl Tusi, AKA Zulu.
Yeah, so, my girl.
They got you a leading lady that was your height. I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. I can see this already.
Pearl was really incredible to work with. She was like full on training with us, doing, you know, she would train at the off hours. And I love people like that because, you know, as an actor, sometimes, you know, you get used to a certain lifestyle and, you know, Pearl's, you know, massively famous in South Africa and, you know, globally as well. But like, she was super dedicated. So she, as soon as she saw me and Eco and everyone getting it 6 hours, 6 days a week, no joke. And she would come on the weekends too. So, and you didn't need to do that, but she just wanted to learn. And she was an amazing, amazing dance partner. And we also have a really great kind of intimate scene together, which I think.
Kinda.
Well, that was actually my first like fully nude love scene, which is crazy because I've been doing this for a minute and it's just like me and Pearl talked about this because we read like a disturbing statistic saying that like Asian men and Black females are like the least like liked on dating apps and stuff, which is crazy. And I don't know if that's true or not, but the thought of it, of like seeing it on screen, I was like, well, you know what? I haven't seen it on screen a lot. So maybe we can help kind of break some stereotypes or break some mentalities of people thinking that, you know, these cultures can't be together. They're not sexual beings and all that kind of nonsense. You know what I mean? So to have somebody like Pearl and I, when we did the scene, we talked a lot about it beforehand and we were both really excited to hopefully like add something that changes the narrative a little bit, you know, to see like an Asian Black couple on screen. It's like, it's not often you see that, you know.
No, absolutely. And
I can't name five films where they've had that.
And especially like in Western culture, like everybody can name a K-drama, but that's usually always, you know, all Korean cast. But if you're over here, when you don't really see an Asian male romantic lead.
Especially not with a black woman.
No, I think there's only one I can think of, and that's with Gabrielle Union and Cho, the guy that was
You know what? And Issa Rae's show too.
Yes, and Issa Rae. I was going to say those are the only two that I know. But think about that.
Yeah, I was just happy because I haven't seen it a lot. I could count on one hand, you know, and so I was proud of that. And it was really nice to have such a, you know, caring and considerate person like Pearl to do that with. So, yeah.
Was it also nerve-wracking? Because I know a lot of people say their first love scene is nerve-wracking because there's 37 people in the room.
let me tell you this. It's not as sexy as it looks because, you know, you're not wearing anything but like a little sock.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's like a bunch of people standing around holding lights and sticking microphones over there. And then, you know, it's not how it looks on screen, but no, I was fine with it.
I think you both did a great job. It came out really well.
It depends who you're working with. Right. And so she was really graceful and we spoke about it a lot before and, you know, we made sure that we were both comfortable with everything that we were doing. And there was a lot of stuff that went into that to talk about. So when we actually were filming, we could feel free and not like, ooh, is it okay if I, you know, like you got to discuss all that beforehand and make sure that it's all good and everyone's comfortable and happy.
Awesome. Well, I think you both did a fabulous job. Now, I am the way, and I'm not going to give away the ending or anything like that, but I'm like, okay, where do we go from here? Like, are we going on another excursion? Because at the, Eco goes through it in this, like, and I think that's one of the biggest things with Kai's character. We spent so much of the Wu Assassin series where he was a pacifist, and he comes out the gate in this like everybody's gonna die. Like, just if I've got to kill him, they've got to go. And it's like, so I wonder, is his arc going to change? Have they given you any hint about that?
Well, we definitely left the ending open for, you know, to explore more options for the third one. If people, you know, watch the film and they like the film and they want to see another one, I'm so down to do it because I love those people. I love them like they're my family. But yeah, like speaking of family, that's the dynamic that we're exploring in this. It's kind of like, you know, season one, we went through this trauma together and we came together and we saved the world. You know, we did this thing that we never thought was possible. Now we've had a trauma that's deeper and closer to us, you know, the death of a loved one. We lost somebody who we're all connected to. And I don't know, if anyone's experienced that type of loss, which I have experienced, and it's like, it could spiral you out of control and it could create down this path that's just, you know, you go down the dark path. And that's kind of what we were exploring here is, we all want revenge. We all want to right this wrong. We all want to find answers, but there's just, it's chaos, you know, it's chaotic. When in reality, we should be uniting and being pulled closer. And that's kind of what we explore in this film. So having said that, there's a lot of places that we can go with the third one, you know? And I think if we keep exploring this type of concept, like I like the way that this film was done, you know, with practical, you know, 90% of it being like practical, 90% of it being shot on real locations, not in a studio, not on a green screen. And I think that if we keep exploring that, I think the possibilities are really endless. You know, it could be kind of like a Fast and the Furious in a way where we can go to different places and have people join us and kind of like explore different themes.
Awesome. I just want to ask about the baddies real quick, and then I want to hear some of the other stuff that you're working on. So Pan and Kuan, like these two, first of all, the actors, Ratha was terrifying. Like, The baddies in this were terrifying. Like, Jason Tobin, you kind of believed, like, I need your help. But Ratha's character was like, I'm killing everyone. What's my ponytail? Yeah, so
that's a long kind of theology in Chinese culture and Asian culture, actually, not just China, but like about the balance of good and evil, about the yin and the yang, about the Tao. The Tao means the way, and the way is the line on the, if you ever seen a yin and yang, the line that goes like that, that's the Tao. That means it's the way. It's not a straight line. It's like, it moves like this, and it's a balancing thing. So yeah, Jason Tobin, who, you know, I've been a huge fan of since way back in the day when he did Better Luck Tomorrow.
And
His career is taken off, and, you know, he's doing such a great work on Warrior. We were so happy to have him. So he's so talented, and it was just great to have him there as that peaceful kind of guy. And he is so peaceful and so cool, but then turns into something completely different at the end. And then Yaya, who is, I've known her for quite a while. She's a pretty big celebrity actress in Thailand. And she's the opposite. She's actually the sweetest person in the world. And on the screen, she's like terrifying and savage.
She's got that stare, man.
She does.
Yaya has that stare.
She does. And you can ask Francesca about that, because she choked Francesca in one of the scenes, and Francesca was scared. So, yeah, it was great to work with both of them. We're fortunate to have them.
I think people are seeing now shows like Warrior, movies like Shang-Chi. And so now, instead of saying like, oh, there's not just one kind of Asian character, one kind of Asian show, it's now people are actually starting to, I know, right? Finally.
So
do you think that movies like Shang-Chi are actually going to help shows and movies like Wu Assassin?
I mean, I don't know if it helps our show in particular, but I think it helps the greater picture for sure. 100%. I mean, to see a Marvel superhero, I mean, who's Asian, and just, you know, Tony Leung in that movie, unreal. Like, I haven't felt like an emotional connection to a character like that on a Marvel film in quite some time. But maybe that's because I'm biased, maybe because I'm Asian, maybe because I've been following Tony Leung's work all throughout his, you know, career with Wong Kar-wai. I don't know. But it definitely helps. It all helps. All the different voices and all the different stories, it helps not just for Asian people, but it, in my mind, it helps everything. Because like I said, the more that we learn about each other, and the more that we see that we're all going through similar things, it just unites us, you know, and it gets rid of the ignorance of some of the things that have been implanted into our minds, you know, by the culture or by
mainstream culture. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This definitely, like I said, reminds me of one of those Saturday morning martial arts movies that I used to
that makes me so happy.
Get up and watch as a kid.
I love those films.
Yes. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm so excited that you were able to pull this off, which is clearly a monumental task behind the scenes between COVID and jumping around to, you're always in a different country. That's why the first question I always ask you is, where are you and when are you? Because you're always someplace else. Now, can you tell us what you're working on next that is not gonna get you into trouble?
Well, I got a few things in the pipeline, but right now I'm in Budapest, Hungary, shooting for Shadow and Bone season 2. People, you know, it's there's not much I can say about what's going on with that right now, except I'm really excited because I love the first season and I love the genre. And I met Lee Bardugo yesterday, and, you know, I was fanning out, so I'm excited to like bring whatever talent and whatever skill I can to up the ante for season 2, and to make it something that the fans are going to go crazy for. People that haven't seen my work before, and then people that have. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to play a pirate, a privateer.
The only thing I wanted to ask you about Shadow and Bone was, before you got the part, had you read any of the books? Had you known any of the lore? Or did you just dive in after getting the role?
No, I hadn't read the books, and I hadn't seen the show, and I heard about the show. But when I was asked about if I was interested in playing this character, I watched one episode to see, kind of to get a gauge. And that ended up turning into all of the episodes
in a day. It grips you, right? It gets you.
Yeah, it got me. It got me. And then I was like, man, the production value is really good. The writing is really good. The acting is good. I'm like, damn, this is good. Kind of reminded me of what I wanted to see Airbender, like the last Avatar Airbender live action movie that I didn't like.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Nobody liked it. It's fine.
Okay. I just don't like ripping on, you know, other people. It could have been better, but we all, you know, we all learn. I get it. So, but it kind of had that vibe of, like, you know, of that type of thing that I wanted to see. And I loved the way that they did this, the visual effects. And so I was excited. I was like, oh, this is cool. I didn't have time to read the book. But after I got the role, I got all the books, and I read the first two. So there's quite a few books more to read.
Well, that's awesome. I can't wait to see what you do with Shadow and Bone. I hope we get to do this again when that drops. But
we will.
In the meantime, absolutely. So I thank you so much, Lewis.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it.
It was nice chatting to you about it. And spread the word, man. Get it out there so, you know, we can keep making these diverse films.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to check out that steamy scene that Lewis was talking about, you got to check out Wu Assassin's Fistful of Vengeance that drops on Netflix here in the US on Thursday, February 17th. Watch it and tell me what you think. Also, don't forget to like and subscribe to the Blurred Girl podcast, and check out If I Go Missing, The Witches Did It, narrated by Gabourey Sidibe on Realm. Don't forget, every Tuesday night, I am live on Twitch on The Blurred Girl Live, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, where I interview a lot of these amazing podcast guests, and you get to witness the uncut versions. So I'll see you next time.